The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back and happy September 21st, 2020. How will Justice Ginsburg's passing and the debate over replacing her shape the election? How many times did that question occur to you or get asked of you this weekend? Perhaps you've asked it yourselves. From where I see things, the actual answer is not that much. But if anything, it helps Republicans. Why? Follow my thinking. One, we are told the president is going to try to rush through this nomination and break norms, break rules, break procedures by so doing. After all, Ruth Bader Ginsburg left a wish herself that her seat not be filled until after the election and a new president is installed. Her word, installed. We are told Republicans, when they ran the Senate in 2016, did not hold a vote to fill the vacancy left by Antonin Scalia's passing, and President Obama put forward a name, a candidate, and Merrick Garland. That's the political case. The Democrats also have, and this defines their position more than anything else, a moral desiderata claim, a political wish. It is their actual motivator, stronger than anything above, stronger than their political case. Why? Because their political or historical, if you prefer, case falls flat on the farthest of inspections and on the simplest of inspections. We'll get to the moral desiderata claim in just a moment. Why does their political historical case fail? I always try to look at a political argument the way an average American might look at it. The person who follows the news a bit, but say maybe would rather turn on a football game or a sitcom than Fox News or CNN. There are a lot of those, don't forget. An NFL game will get five times or more as many viewers as your best rated Fox or CNN program. This even with the NFL viewership down this year. What might that average American know or think about Ginsburg's passing and Trump's nomination or nominating her replacement? Well, despite all the encomia to Ginsburg, I'm going to bet most of them didn't know who she was until her passing. They, including most well-informed, better-than-average, most attentive Americans, cannot name you a single decision she weighed in on or a landmark case she changed or shaped. If you doubt me, ask. Not even the screaming women posting their caterwauls on Instagram and TikTok while driving can name you a single case of hers. I'm betting right now, if you walk up and down your street and ask almost any non-lawyer or non-talk radio host or listener who Stephen Breyer is or who Sonia Sotomayor is or who Elena Kagan is, they won't know. So what do they know? I think generally this. One, the president gets to appoint Supreme Court justices. If they know something more, they may know it's not automatic, and that, two, the Senate gets to approve them. And that, three, there is a vacancy now. All this business about what McConnell said in 2016 is easily answered by what Biden and Schumer said in the other direction and is ultimately a wash. Yes, I know there are distinctions about party control and majority, but unless one is prepared to talk about the high-minded and honored in the breach notions of the advice and consent clause, I don't think those arguments are particularly persuasive in one direction or the other. Biden had a different opinion then than he does now. McConnell may have had a different opinion than he does now, despite the fact that the argument is about different parties in the presidency and in the Senate. That's all part of the political play out, but it's also true. What else is also true that nullifies all the Democrats' Sturmandrang? Andy McCarthy put it this way, and Chuck Schumer can lecture all he wants otherwise. Joe Biden can whisper all he wants otherwise. It's still monumentally, historically, politically, and constitutionally true. In reality, forget the Biden rule, forget the McConnell rule, forget any rule. In reality, there are only two rules, both set forth in the Constitution. A president, for as long as he or she is president, has the power to nominate a person to fill a Supreme Court seat. And that nominee can fill the seat only with the advice and consent of the Senate. That's it. Everything else is posturing. Everything else is politics. Presidents select Supreme Court nominees. The Senate votes on them. Oh, maybe one more thing. A president's term runs through January. Not 3 years, not 3.5 years, but 4 years. But isn't this, with an election so close, a special moment and time deserving extraordinary procedures, were asked? Well, if a cabinet member died, if we were struck by an enemy force, if there were a national crisis or catastrophe, would we all say, let's just wait until after the election to deal with it? Or, rather, is the president still the president and the Senate still the Senate, charged with their jobs? Are their payrolls and other duties in any way suspended? Furthermore, an awful lot of Supreme Court justices have been nominated and approved of in an election year, including some of the most famous. John Marshall Harlan, who famously dissented in the Plessy v. Ferguson case and was arguably more influential legally than Ruth Bader Ginsburg, he was replaced in a presidential election year. Louis Brandeis, after whom the university is named, was nominated and appointed in an election year. Charles Evan Hughes, who resigned in an election year to run for another office, the presidency, actually, was replaced in an election year. Oliver Wendell Holmes, perhaps one of the most famous of all Supreme Court justices, was replaced in an election year with one of the more cited justices even today, Benjamin Cardozo. Presidents Franklin Roosevelt, Dwight Eisenhower, Lyndon Johnson, Ronald Reagan, they all did it. The idea that Ruth Bader Ginsburg herself left a dying wish she not be replaced until a new president is installed is as relevant as my telling my general manager not to replace me or who he should replace me with were I to resign, retire, or be struck by a car. It may show some insight into my thinking, but that's not how it works. Just consider, if Antonin Scalia left in his will that he wanted William Barr to succeed him should he pass prematurely or during a Democrat's presidency, just how much deference would Chuck Schumer give that? Indeed, as I stated on Friday, Ruth Bader Ginsburg could have stepped down at any point. Indeed, in 2016, she was 83 years old and had health problems then, too. Barack Obama was president. She gambled that Hillary Clinton would win the presidency. She'd retire on Hillary's watch and Hillary would replace her. She chose or gambled wrong. In any event, presidents select Supreme Court justices, and we all consider that in voting for a president, don't we? Supreme Court justices do not pick their successors or tell the president how to pick their successors any more than Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi tells the president or their home state governors who gets to replace them if they leave office or pass prematurely. As for breaking norms, the Democrats have lost their moral credibility on that. After all, weren't they the party that thought it appropriate to impeach a president in an election year? They used everything in their quiver, a word popular again just now, to prove to the country that Brett Kavanaugh was a high school gang rapist. And worse, they used uncredible witnesses. They deployed Michael Avenatti. They engaged in a search and destroy mission. They searched and searched. They even managed to destroy. They destroyed Brett Kavanaugh's good name and family. They destroyed norms. They destroyed normalcy. They destroyed civility and decency. They've tried much the same with Russian collusion and impeachment, to be sure. Their wolf crying, though, is now exasperated, because it's exasperating. Which is why I say their only argument, the only truly most important to them, the one that motivates them more than any other, is their moral desiderata claim, their political wish. For all you hear about Republicans having politicized the court, ask this: who used and uses the court to undo executive orders, congressional laws, and state laws and propositions that pass democratically? Who more than any other has used the courts to turn political questions into judicial ones? Who has used the courts to upend majoritarian political decision-making processes and outcomes? who has taken all the normal issues people vote on and decide, should vote on and decide, and given them to an unelected tribunal of non-political branch, of the non-political branch to decide. In other words, who trusts the people and who has sought government by fiat in an appointed judicial expert? Who invents philosophical gibberish to guarantee political outcomes that are not supported by the people? Who has written and cheered a Supreme Court that would take a state's decision and overrule it by use of, in the word of the court, quote, penumbras formed by emanations? Think about that. The court was sought to and used penumbras formed by emanations to enter the realm of family and life law. By definition, penumbras and emanations are shadows and abstracts. That's how you now have Roe v. Wade and any other number of decisions based on things the Constitution never said and does not address. And when penumbras and emanations, or shadows and abstracts, have begun to show some shelf life, you got this language from the court. Quote, at the heart of liberty is the right to define one's own concept of existence, of meaning, of the universe, and of the mystery of human life, close quote. I'll read it again. At the heart of liberty is the right to define one's own concept of existence, of meaning, of the universe, and of the mystery of human life. That is little more than an open-ended validation of ever-cascading subjectivism, dressed up as legal and constitutional judicial analysis. You see, if the left and the progressives were not so divorced from the mainstream, that is to say, if their ideas and policy prescriptions were not so absurd, they would be able to convince majorities of them at the ballot box. But they are so absurd, and they cannot. Thus, they must and have to rely on rule by courts and judges, for it's easier to convince five academics of progressive policies than it is 51% of any or most given populations. End of day. There is no historical reason or constitutional legitimacy to the argument the president must wait for an election. End of day, I think most people will realize to wait for an election to nominate a judge is itself a corruption, the brazen manipulation of the judicial system for political purposes and political ends. That is precisely, in other words, the opposite of why we have a Supreme Court. We have it to ignore the whims and whimsy of politics. We've never said that a court's decision or a court's vacancy should depend on a singular election. The president is empowered, whoever he or she is, to nominate Supreme Court justices. You learn that in the eighth grade. The Senate has the responsibility of voting on or against those nominations. You learn that in the eighth grade. Donald Trump is the president and campaigned on doing this very thing. The U.S. Senate was given ever greater Republican majorities between 2016 and now, in part on the idea that the Senate approves the justices that the president selects. Ruth Bader Ginsburg could have retired at any point. Her own publicized wish is itself an extrajudicial power grab, a plain irrelevancy, if not violation, of her office. The Democrats who raise hell and lower heaven with all their alarms and excursions about all this, they know all this. But they know one thing even more. To get their progressive outcomes, they need the courts. And to get the courts, they need the justices. We've learned that too. You see, you can only corrupt a system so long. You can only game a system so long. You can only operate in furtive violation of the constitutional order so long before the other side becomes aware and privy to it. We are aware and privy now. And I suppose it is this more than anything else that is the cause of our partisan distemper. The Democrats don't like it that we declared the days of surrender over. For what we've surrendered for too long is normalcy and common sense, not to mention constitutionalism. Well, that white flag doesn't wave anymore. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I want to tell you about Dinesh D'Souza's latest film, Trump Card. It's an expose of the socialism, corruption, gangsterism that defines the modern Democratic Party. Film reveals what's unique about modern socialism, who's behind it, why it's evil, and how we can work with President Trump to stop it. Pre-order your DVD and video on demand now at watchtrumpcard.com. That's watchtrumpcard.com. I hope you all have had a good weekend. Got Dagny at my feet. I got sore legs because I cross-training now with running as well as the cycling. Oh, my gosh. And I've got Bill wearing another Recondite T-shirt. My producer. Yeah, Recondite. I'm going back to calling you Connie. I should. I shall. What does your T-shirt say?
Cheap seats.
And is that some kind of signal, plan, cue? Some kind of shibboleth to some sell here?
If only it was that interesting. It was a show about 15, 20 years ago that made fun of old sports shows. Mystery Science Theater sports version, you could say.
You don't mean that old show with the Sklar twins.
That's the one.
No one knows that show.
One man in the office did besides me.
No, they did not. You have worn that just as an excuse to say, oh, no, it's an ESPN show, a likely thing to say. It's truly a shibboleth, though. It's a code word.
Total shibboleth.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about you. Probably you might be a fifth columnist. I may have to. Have you watched? Do you know what I'm talking about? Hey, what's that? What's that movie? It was remade with Denzel Washington.
Manchurian Candidate.
You knew that a little too quickly. Manchurian Uh-oh. Candidate. You got that answer just a little too quick. What is with our political leaders, or at least the political leaders in the Democratic Party, that are showing signs of incomprehensibility and agedness? Joe Biden, at a speech this weekend, said the Supreme Court there's time to wait till after the election. The Supreme Court doesn't even go back in session till November. He is the former chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He knows darn tootin' well that the Supreme Court always starts in October. First Monday in October. There was a movie called The First Monday in October in 1981 starring Walter Matthau. A movie. It was so popular that it was just a little eerie. It was about a woman replacing a male on a Supreme Court, and it came out at the same time that Sandra O'Connor was nominated by Ronald Reagan. First Monday in October is another thing every eighth grader says. Why does he say the Supreme Court doesn't even convene until November? Because he's lost it. As he did here in the same speech, said this.
Estimated 200 million people have died, probably by the time I finish this talk.
From the coronavirus, from COVID, 200 million people? Okay. Full stop on this for a second, just to get a measurement of the thought. Because the first thing to say is, well, it might have been a typo on the teleprompter. It might have been. But do you say that typo? Do you know how many people 200 million is? Over two-thirds of the U.S. population has died from COVID? See, I think in a way they're just throwing any number out they want any time, because the point is to exaggerate as much as possible, to spread the fear as much as possible. So to him, 200 million sounds, yeah, that's a scary number. That's got to be what it is, because you cannot tell me the former vice president of the United States wanting to be president of the United States can possibly think even a million people have died, much less 200 million people in the United States, by the end of his speech. If he were right, we wouldn't be here now. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. 34 minutes past the hour means it's time for the great John Dombrowski. He of Grand Canyon Planning Associates, GrandCanyonPlanning.com, his great website. Happy Monday, John. I hope you had a good weekend.
I did. How about yourself?
I did. I started cross-training a little, so I... So you know that soreness. I started running a little again now that the weather has cooled off. Taking the Wonder Dog gets those legs a little sore.
So it's funny because people see me and they go, "Are you a runner?" And I go, "Not really. Do you work out?" "No, not really." "Why you look so fit and thin?" "Well, I don't know how fit I am, but I am thin." And I think it's just genetics, you know. Seth, my dad was
It's not gerontology. It's
genetics. My dad was thin.
You want people to like you, though, John. So yeah. I don't think you want to rub it in now.
I know. That's what people say. All right. Yeah. But, oh, well.
I thought you were a runner, though.
I know.
Knowing you, I thought you were a runner.
I did for a very short period of time.
Well, that's what I must be thinking of.
Yeah, I did get into it for a while, but that didn't last.
Well, we're going to spend a lot of the show today talking about the obvious, which is Article 3 stuff, Supreme Court stuff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But let's not forget that while a lot of the politics wants to push decision-making into the realm of the importance of the Supreme Court, which it does,
It's
still economy that people vote on, probably primary to everything else.
Right.
And Joe Biden's capital gains tax is getting a little bit more attention these days. You've looked at it. What are you seeing on that front?
So Vice President Biden has proposed increasing the top tax rate for capital gains. And these are for the highest earners. Doesn't go into too much detail of who the highest earners would be.
Yeah, I worry about that.
Right, of course. From 23.8% to 39.6%. Can you just imagine that? So if you buy a stock at $100 a share and it goes up to $200, you may have to pay almost 40% of that in capital gains tax. Now, with that's the largest increase in capital gains rate history. So that's a big deal. And if you go back and look at the last couple of times when these capital gains tax hikes have gone into effect, it would lead to a tremendous amount of selling. And, of course, selling in the stock market, more supply than demand, usually drives stock prices down.
Interesting. Now, this capital gains, it really can affect some people. Explain capital gains, because it has to do with holding on purchases. There's certain time limits. There's a year. Tell the audience what we mean by capital.
So basically, a capital gain is an investment into something such as stocks, bonds, mutual funds, real estate. These are capital assets. So we're not talking about your wages, your earned income. We're not talking about interest income or dividend type of income. That's income. We're talking about a gain on an investment. That gain is taxable. Now, the critical thing is tax rate, right? So you can hold on to an asset for over 12 months, a capital asset, and you usually, depending on your income, can get a reduction in that for holding that asset for over 12 months, long-term capital gain.
That's right. That's the point. That's why people say, well, why does a year matter? Because of that.
And it can be substantial depending on your overall income rate.
You bet.
And so with that being said, it encourages people to invest in the market for the long term, even though long term a year is not really long term. But for tax dollars, it certainly is a long time, right? That 1 year. So that's a big deal. So if I knew, as an example, that Vice President Biden was going to be elected and then he was going to change this law, what would I do with all of the gains that I've accumulated in the market?
Right.
Because if it's going to be taxed at possibly 24% versus 40%, why wouldn't I sell?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the concern is that if even before the law would potentially be enacted, people are going to sell. They're going to want to try to take as much gain as they can at a lower tax rate. And that's not the idea of the whole tax base is to try to do that. But that's what people are going to do. It's going to force people to do that. So maybe if you were going to do that, maybe it should be on purchases of assets that you purchase moving forward.
Yeah, that would be a perspective. Yeah, right.
Rather than assets that you've held for 10, 15, 20 years.
Sure.
So that you could take advantage of that.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thought, but this is the type of thing that we're looking at. There's a definite clear difference because the president's looking at ways to even lower the capital gains tax. So there's definite differences between the two candidates. And it's going to be interesting to watch the debates, if there are debates.
Oh, don't give me that, if there are
debates. I hope there are. I want to see it.
If there are debates.
Well, I don't know. I don't really know. You're the political guy.
I don't know more than you know, but my gosh, if they cancel the debates, then it means the Democrats are done.
Yeah.
I think everyone knows what that bark off that tree means at that point.
Yeah. Hey, first a cowboy movie. I was reading this thing.
Ever?
Kit Carson.
Ah!
The first cowboy film, Kit Carson, premiered in the U.S. in 1903 on this day.
Well done, sir.
Yeah, interesting.
All right.
Kit Carson, he was an amazing guy.
I need you fast here.
Securities and Advisory Services, of the Client One Securities LLC, a member of FINRA, Certificate and Investment Advisor, Grand Canyon Planning Associates LLC, and Client One Securities LLC, and not affiliate.
One of two Styx songs in our bumper music, isn't it? This was the first LP I think I ever owned myself or bought with my own money, my allowance, I think. It was a 45 RPM, and I don't remember what was on the other side. I just thought the song was so cool I had to own it, especially with that monologal opening, the a cappella monologal opening. Greg is in Scottsdale. Welcome to the show, Greg. How are you?
Fine, Seth. How are you doing?
I'm just fine. Thank you, sir.
So I think we would all agree that the passing of Judge Ginsburg gave another shot of adrenaline to an already absolutely polarized and heightened election. I think it got people even more on edge than they were before. And listening to your opening monologue, I think, you know, everything is background noise to me of being a conservative, except the fact comparing and contrasting Judge Garland's nomination to the current situation.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember the details of how much time was left.
I think he was put up in around late January or February of 2016, I think.
There was more time left now.
More time left then. Yeah, it was like it was February, I think, when Garland's name was put up, I think.
And maybe I should know this, but does Mitch McConnell, who was the leader of the Senate at the time as well, have unilateral authority to not nominate or hear the process of Judge Garland at the time?
Well, no, but he led the Senate. His party, the Republican Party, was in the majority, and they decide the rules as to whether they were going to take up the nomination and send it to the Senate Judiciary Committee, if they, in other words, what's called moving on the nomination, and they did not move on it. They refused to do so. The justification was at the time that when you have a president of one party, Obama, Democrat, and a Senate of a different party, Republican, that's a different scenario. Because it attests to divided government in an election year. That's a different scenario than if you had a president and a Senate of the same party. That's the justification. But I want to say something else, and I'll give you the last word. Okay, I will give as many words as you want. I just have to put this out here. All this revisiting is honestly an endless kaleidoscope. Because you're going to find Joe Biden on both sides of this. You're going to find Chuck Schumer on both sides of this. Going back to the 80s, you're going to find a lot of people on both sides of this. As our listener and friend and contributor Charles puts it, McCoy shot the Hatfield because a Hatfield previously shot a McCoy, and the McCoy shot a Hatfield before that because, you know. Here are the facts we have now. Simply put, as I understand it, I don't think it's controvertible. You have a Republican president. You had a Republican Senate in 2016. it increased its numbers in 2018. Thus, more of a Republican mandate on any issue the president and the Senate would work on. The president didn't end his presidency on September 19th, and the Senate didn't end this session on September 19th. They are the president and the Senate up until next and through next January. So we can go back and look at who said what when. But there is a constitutional mandate here. And going into an election year, into an election, you may just want to ask the question, if the election is thrown to the Supreme Court, as was done in Bush v. Gore, and there's more noise about that than there has ever been since probably the year 1800, do you want a 4-4 Supreme Court?
My answer is absolutely not.
No, you cannot. It's a political and legal irresponsibility.
Yeah, that clarifies it quite a bit. I guess my only, if Mitch McConnell would have accepted back then, Judge Garland, they would have let that go to the full Senate. What might have happened with?
Well, he would have been approved. I'm sure he would have been approved because the Senate was in the hands of. I'm sure he would have been approved. But here's the problem. Here's the problem. If McConnell and the Republicans did that in 2016, do you think, and this is why I talk about white flags and surrender, do you think that would weigh one iota on the Democrats' position today? Would they say, oh, well, McConnell was such a good guy in 2016, let's repay him with his decency and just have Donald Trump throw up Amy Coney Barrett or whoever else? The point is they
absolutely
wouldn't.
Not.
Of course
no
they would. Exactly. And that's what I mean by the lesson we learned. They're going to play hard. They're talking about stacking the Supreme Court. They're talking about D.C. and Puerto Rican statehood. They're talking about all kinds of they impeached a president in election year. What yeah. Did they buy the argument? Let the people decide in November? No.
Absolutely no. Not. I guess my concern back then, and this doesn't matter because it never happened, that if Garland would have gone to the full Senate, the same four or five or six Republicans that could derail a nomination today or the next few weeks would be the same ones that would have voted for him back then.
Yeah.
And
were they all there?
You know, that's a whole
were they all there? I'm not what, sure if they were all there. Was Romney there?
Well,
Romney wasn't
you still
there.
You have.
Yeah,
Collins,
yeah, yeah. You're right. You're right. You had Murkowski and you had Collins for sure. You're right about that.
Yes, yeah. I don't know if Romney was there.
No,
or not.
I don't think he was. He wasn't. He wasn't there till afterwards. He wasn't there. He was elected in 2018.
I think Sass was there, was he not?
Yes, John. Ben Sass. I don't know. I don't know if Ben Sass was there. I don't know. I just don't remember.
Okay. Because you've got the usual cast of characters right now that it derailed the whole thing, I guess, and then it gets thrown to the election anyways. But anyhow. Well, hey, I appreciate it.
Yeah, you betcha, Greg. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Have a good one. I'm Seth, 602-580-960. Be right back.
Had the experience of Clarence Thomas.
Is that the theme from Shaft? Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Brandon Weikert's going to come back next hour, and then Kurt Schlichter in the third hour. He wrote, I think, the single best column on all of this over at Town Hall. All right. I was mentioning the Biden audio that we ran earlier and how what kind of mind it takes, what kind of presence of mind it takes to even say 200 million Americans have died from the coronavirus or on Trump's watch. that's more extreme than saying the Supreme Court doesn't convene until November, first Monday in October. That's what it's been. That was the movie in 1981. That's what Joe Biden absolutely has should have known as the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. But he wasn't alone in having a televised or a nationally televised senior moment. Did you see Nancy Pelosi with Stephanopoulos this weekend? This didn't get much comment. It's available on YouTube. It's weird. Watch this. Listen to this.
10 states, as I said, on Friday, started their early voting the day that we lost Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
But to be clear, you're not taking any arrows out of your quiver. You're not ruling anything out.
Good morning. Sunday morning.
Weird.
Weird.
Do it again, Bill. Bill, do you mind doing it again? Can you do it again? I appreciate it.
States, as I said, on Friday, started their early voting the day that we lost Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
But to be clear, you're not taking any arrows out of your quiver. You're not ruling anything out.
Good morning. Sunday morning. We have a responsibility. We take an oath to protect and defend the Constitution.
George Stephanopoulos' face didn't really move, but I'm sure the wheels were turning, which raises the question, did she lose it? Or is she using a teleprompter with televised interviews too, and the teleprompter scrolled back to the top, say good Sunday morning or good morning or happy Sunday? In the middle of the interview, a direct question, which wasn't a hard one, one she certainly would have been prepped for, anyone could have extemporaneously spoke to, do you have arrows in your quiver? It's a weird question to a House member, but she is the Speaker of the House, and it could be asked about the party more than Speaker of the House, I suppose. And she says, good morning, Sunday morning. So weird. Is anyone going to comment on this? Am I the only one that finds this troubling? It's troubling. It's troubling. Be right back.